Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio presents OPA 103. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting to my right is Ken Phillips. What's going on, sir?
Hey, it's a great night to be recording here in Columbus, Ohio. We got a newly renovated OPA Studios North we're enjoying here this evening. So, yeah, I'm feeling great, Kevin.
Yeah, it's a little more comfortable in here. We could use a little more comfort on our behinds, which will eventually be produced. But for now, that's got to be not part of the renovation.
You have a poetic way of putting things, Kevin.
Well, that's why I do several podcasts, Ken.
Yeah.
I have very poetic ways with my words.
It makes sense that you're, you know, following your calling, your obvious talents.
Yes, I'm not following them to South Beach, but no. I'm following them to Northwest Columbus.
As you should.
On our last episode, we talked about some video games, and we do have a correction and omission.
Mm.
Well, actually, it's more just a correction, not necessarily an omission.
Correct. If our listeners may remember the last episode, we were enthusing about the year 1988 in relation to video games, vis-a-vis being the best year for video games, based on the release of some... pretty good games during that time period, I would say.
Yeah, there were a lot of them. One of them that we did mistake is that Super Mario 2 did indeed come out in 1988.
Which I would say is a good game. And it counts towards 1988 being a great game for video games.
Yeah, but 1988 did take a little bit of a hit.
Right.
Our good friend Joss Mustachio pointed out to us that Super Mario 3 came out in 1990 in the U.S. So that that would not be included. Much like I was bummed about River City Ransom being 1989. I'll tell you what, 88 takes a little bit of a blow losing Super Mario 3.
Unless I guess you take the global view, in which case... it did come out somewhere in 1988.
Well,
so in some universal sense, 1988 could be still considered a great year for video games, Kevin. I don't know.
Yeah, I would definitely still rank it a bit higher than some other years. I will have to say that.
Just because they were the games we played growing up, I'm sure. But
Yeah. I'm sure that someone else would argue some other year that does not involve 1988.
Yeah, so it did seem strange to me. I remember looking at that in Wikipedia, seeing those 2 years, or the same year, 88 for both Super Mario 2 and 3. And I don't know if we mentioned this in our last show, but Super Mario 2 came out... first in Japan as a different game, basically, and they reskinned it to be become Super Mario 2 by changing out the characters that were in the original video game with, like, Mario, Luigi, Princess, and Toad. And that was a very different game in Japan, I guess. It was just Super Mario 2 in Japan was more like more Super Mario 1 levels, and so they knew they couldn't come out with that in the United States. So rather than just have an inferior product put out, they kind of quickly reskinned a different Japanese game into Super Mario 2. And I think it was successful, I would say, although very different than the other games.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about how different that one was in gameplay until we had talked about it last show.
Yes. So that's why they came out with 2 and 3 in the same year.
And that would also explain why it seemed a little bit odd in the canon of Super Mario games.
Yes. Yes, that's true. But
one other console that I know that we've talked about a couple of times and definitely came up then, because we talked about the one game on Commodore 64 that I wanted to beat, Zach McCracken.
Mm.
And someone just came up with a clone of the Commodore 64 keyboard.
Well, yeah,
it's which is pretty awesome.
It's a miniaturized version, though.
Right.
So, the kind of bummer thing about it, I guess, is that the keyboard doesn't actually work. But you trade some functionality in order to actually save some space, because, as I recall, the original Commodore 64 keyboard was not small in today's terms.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's one of those things that I don't really think about what the size of the keyboard was back then.
I mean, I'm guessing it was like...
Just larger than a
foot and a half or so. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't remember it feeling gigantic to me. Like, I know that this laptop in front of me is smaller than the keyboard that I used as probably a 10-year-old child.
True.
But I guess I don't really have any grasp on what that size was, though.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember. Look that up here. It is difficult to say with certainty, but you know how sometimes things seem bigger when you're a younger person. So then when you look back and you see that they were actually not that big.
Right.
So it could be this kind of situation. But I think they'd be bigger than what, yeah, people would be used to today. So having it smaller does make sense in terms of storage and whatnot, but you do lose, it does come with USB ports, so you can plug in a keyboard.
Yeah, it is more functional than that keyboard would be.
No floppy drive, but yes, you can plug in a hard drive. So,
and you can plug in a joystick, yeah. Which the writer of this article did bemoan the quality of the joystick. And said that it was just as terrible as it used to be.
Oh, right. Now, I don't even remember using a joystick, to be honest with you, playing a Commodore 64 game. I can just remember using the keyboard to press buttons, but do you recall?
Well, and I've got to scroll down to see some of the games, because I felt like I do remember. I do feel like I did the majority of them. Because I felt like it was a lot like Nintendo, especially like, oh yeah, because they're showing California games. Like, I feel like we used a joystick, because I remember having to do the left and right, like as fast as you can to build up speed. Because they're showing the half pipe in the California games, and I felt like that was the way that you built up speed in like every game in Atari and through Commodore 64.
Wow. So you really do have to rely on hammering the joystick, which probably in turn is more likely to cause the joystick to fail somehow. So it's really not a virtuous circle there at all. Your joystick probably doesn't start out great, but then through the crazy use that you're putting it through, it ends up getting worse. Like the contacts wear out.
Yeah. So I would imagine that having a joystick of similar quality would be a little bit odd, mm-hmm. and off-putting for a modern gamer. Like, because they did mention that the controls for other similar devices, like NES emulators, are better than they were. Because, I mean, I remember using the NES controllers and playing for so long that the cross from the joystick was imprinted in my thumb.
Because it was like a real sharp edge compared to what they have today, you know. the cross pad for the controller.
Yeah, the controllers are much softer than they used to be. I would imagine that some people developed carpal tunnel from both uses of the joystick and the NES pad.
Yeah, that could mess up your thumb. And it was something that was known, I remember. like getting NES thumb.
Yeah, I always feel like it used to spasm every now and again when I was just playing for incredibly long amounts of time. I mean, I remember staying up at a friend's house to play, well, your house sometimes, and our other friend Ryan's house, and just playing because their parents would let us stay up all night. Or maybe not let us, or just not care, one of the two.
Well, that's pretty fun. You guys are playing video games all night?
Yeah, I remember playing, like, just running through the night and, like, walking down to Sheets to get pork rinds in the morning.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Or Middlesworth Chips. Doing a shout-out to, you know, Central Pennsylvania for the for my chip variety.
Represent. Well done. You're building up Central Pennsylvania cred with this.
Yeah, but I mean, it would be a lot of fun. Like, this was another. This would be another one where I know that I did use that you had downloaded some NES emulators when we had lived together, and I remember playing some of the great games. Like, I remember beating Dragon Warrior again, which I was kind of pumped about, and I played some Genghis Khan, which was awesome. Was that the name of the game? Or
that was called Genghis Khan, yeah.
Okay.
You were different, like, five different choices of rulers or something. Well, it was probably more than five. But from around the time of Genghis Khan. I remember in the single-player version, you actually started out as Temujin, which was his name before becoming the Great Khan, so.
Oh.
You sort of had to work your way up to that point. I think you had to, like, consolidate Mongolia, and then from there go on to consolidate the world, which I don't remember that being particularly easy to do.
No, I remember that taking quite some time, even when you were somewhat efficient in doing so.
Or else nobody had a clue how to play that game. One of two options.
I don't know. It always seems like that's one of those games that I feel like they just had the, you know, all games have that FU mode. Where it's just like, no matter what you do, they just send you bad juju. You know, it just screws you over just because it's the program and it can't let you get too far ahead.
Yeah, I think they call that like a rubber band type AI, where it will ratchet up the difficulty when you're starting to like get ahead, kind of like a rubber band will stretch but then kind of pull back.
Oh, okay. I have not heard of that before, but it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's sort of infamous for being annoying to play against. So there's some racing games that are like that, and it's kind of lame. Because you can't really ever feel like you're doing well, because when you're doing well, the computer is like matching and keeping up with you. But then if you screw up, then it's not like you really screwed up either, because the computer is like going to slow down for you. It's really kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's just laughing at you then when you screw up. Ha ha!
Right. Come on, catch up. Yeah, that's not that much fun. So that would be my least favorite kind of AI. But sometimes you're going to have that. I think that's one way to kind of make things simpler, is to sort of base what their response is to what you're doing in terms of building a computer opponent. But it turns out not to be great from a playing perspective, even if it's better from a programming perspective.
there's a big difference between those two things.
So I definitely remember playing California games on the Commodore 64. Do you think that there would be enough games that you would be willing to actually purchase this Commodore 64 device that would let you
run? Yeah, that's one of those things that it's just kind of tough. You know, I'm not sure that I need to purchase that, and I'm not sure what I would do with it at this time.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, like, even the NES games, I felt like they were pretty easy to conquer, and I just wonder if, you know, a lot of it's just the allure of the past.
Right. Well, and obviously.
Yeah. And these kind of things like, tend to cost too much, in my opinion, to make it worthwhile. It's just like, oh, $100-some-odd. It's just like, really? Like I said, I already know that through emulators, like, I'm not going to get that much good gameplay. Like, it's just a nostalgia trip that I'll probably do once and be done with. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really worth it.
Right. Because I had that exact experience when I got a Atari game. Well, it was like a stand that you could plug an iPad into. And so we had an iPad at the time, and I plugged it in, and...
Oh, okay. It was, I think if this is correct, at the bottom of the column, it's $100. Which, it's just on that borderline. I guess as soon as you start going three digits is when I start kind of checking out for this kind of thing. There's still something magical about that, even though $100 isn't a terribly large amount.
And it does suck that there is no manuals that it comes with for the 64 games that it comes with. I don't know if it comes with Zach McCracken, though. That could be
a deal breaker. I'll have to look into that. That might sway me one way or the other to throw out that extra hundo. Yeah, I don't want a PlayStation 4 with, oh my gosh, Shahid... sent a screen cap of that God of War game. Oh, you might not have seen advertisement for it because you don't have conventional TV.
I've heard that it's selling, like, by far it's the biggest seller for the PlayStation 4. So, apparently people are digging it.
Yeah, the graphics are bonkers awesome. Like, he sent that screen cap and I'm like, holy smokes. Like, I mean, it looks like artwork. You know, and I'm sure there's moving gameplay. I mean, I'm sure it's not like that for everything, but man, that scene in particular was crazy good.
That's pretty cool. I remember playing, I guess it was the original God of War for PlayStation 2, must have been. But I remember really liking that game then, so if they're keeping the series going, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that... I'm not sure how much that runs to get a PS4, but, you know, that's kind of the other thing. You know, if it's like even $200 to get one of those, if I'm going to play, don't you kind of go for the latest and greatest?
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was at least $300 for a PlayStation 4. We may have to our crack research team.
Since you're already on it, I'm just letting it go. I was thinking about looking it up, but
yeah. So it's $259 at GameStop. That's used. Oh. And then $389 at, well, it's a bundle from Kohl's. So yeah, close to
$400.
$400, yeah.
I don't know what the bundle includes exactly, but...
Bigger hard drive, it looks like, and probably a game.
Or well, two. I was wondering if controls are included all the time or not. I've heard of crazy shenanigans like that. Like, I mean, it's still kind of mind-boggling. I haven't really had a gaming system... Jeremy loaned me a PlayStation 1, or not loaned me, when he got a PlayStation 2, I think I got his 1, and that was the last console that I had. So, I mean, it's kind of been a while since I've had even a console.
Yeah, that is quite a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was still married to the other wife.
We had a Wii.
So it was a while ago.
Which was pretty fun. But yeah, that was our most recent one. So it's been a while for us too, but not quite that long. But so
Yeah.
That, I, looking back, it was probably a bad idea for me to sell that Wii, because I think we could probably still be using that, but, I think we just kind of got tired of it at that point. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you have bad ideas and, you know, you end up acting on them, but then sometimes you have bad ideas and you don't end up acting on them, Kevin.
Yeah, evidently, news has come out that Harvey Weinstein threatened to take Lord of the Rings away from Peter Jackson and have Quentin Tarantino direct it. That is the headline. Honestly, I felt like just with that, I could have done half a show. I haven't still really looked at the article, but I love Quentin Tarantino. I think we've made that clear over our 102 shows prior to this, that both of us enjoy his work.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a crazy supposition here, though, I gotta say. Because apparently Peter Jackson was under contract with the Weinstein Company originally when he started making the movie. And Harvey Weinstein, I mean, if you need further evidence of him being a total piece of shit.
Well, yeah, you can't really call him. I mean, this is an idiot move, but you can't really bag on him too much because you're going to make bad choices along the way.
I can't believe you're defending Harvey Weinstein, Kevin. This is a dramatic move by you.
I'm not saying I'm defending his policies with women, which is too much. But, maybe I shouldn't defend this just because I guess I get that you're friends with Tarantino.
Uh-huh.
So...
Well, yes.
I understood this is covered.
But the reasoning behind it was really bothersome to me, because he wanted to make Lord of the Rings into one movie. And among other scenes, he wanted to cut the scene with the Balrog, which to me, like, how do you even...
Oh, God. Okay.
I mean, that's a pretty big scene, I would say. Wouldn't you, Kevin? I mean, Lord of the Rings, I feel like, is something that we come back to quite a bit here.
Yeah. That's just, again, like, I felt like Peter Jackson was somewhat mostly faithful to the book, except for the middle movie. But, you know, that was that part of the first, or was that actually the middle movie?
Well, he didn't want to... Oh, the Balrog scene was in the first movie.
Oh, okay, it was in the first movie.
But Weinstein wanted to have just one movie.
Okay, you got me off track. If you're, talking about the getting rid of the Balrog scene, is just... You gotta do that. Like, it shows how badass Gandalf is.
Right. And he has to die there. So what is he gonna do, die off screen? Like, that seems ridiculous to me. Or not have him die? I mean, that's even worse.
Yeah. That's a trash
move. I don't know what's worse. I don't know. They're both bad. It's a bad idea. And then to say that he threatened to take the movie away and give it to Quentin Tarantino, I'm not sure what a Quentin Tarantino Lord of the Rings movie would look like, Kevin.
That's almost one of those things that in some way I'm like, I would be fascinated. Like, the conversations that the hobbits and everyone would have, I'm trying to figure out how the Quentin Tarantino dialogue would work. Even from the, like, I mean, he never really takes from source material necessarily. Like, all of his source material are other movies.
You know, he would have to somehow work in a speech about giving foot rubs, you know, especially given the Hobbit's feet. I mean, it's that scene is definitely in there. But yeah, it's such a strange mashup, it seems like, because a lot of the themes that are in the Lord of the Rings, I feel like would not be really interesting for Quentin Tarantino.
And I guess it kind of goes to that too. Like, would Tarantino be interested in something like that? Like,
it's hard to imagine.
I mean, you kind of make a good point. Like, what would his interest level be? Like, because it doesn't seem like he likes a lot of stuff, but he does not seem like he's the Dungeons and Dragons guy. Not saying he never played, but he doesn't seem like a D&D kind of guy.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say he's never played. I don't know that for sure, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. That is my impression. Quentin Tarantino has never played Dungeons and Dragons. I'm going out on a limb. But I don't know. Either way, it's just hard to imagine what that would be like. I mean, I guess you have the battle scenes and the violence, which seems like it would kind of work for Tarantino's
preferred genre.
Right. If you can imagine a Kill Bill version of Lord of the Rings.
Kill Sauron.
Sauron is played by David Carradine.
That's what they call the movie instead of Lord of the Rings, just because they cut it down to one movie. Kill Sauron.
So I don't know. I mean, that does sound somewhat entertaining in a way, but I don't know if I would want that to be like the, you know, definitive, like the only movie version of Lord of the Rings.
Oh no, I would have been pissed. Like, because it just would have been something that, you know, it just didn't work for the source material. It just really, Tarantino isn't the right guy to do that. I'm sure there are plenty of great directors out there that could have done something similar to what Peter Jackson did.
Although, do you think that they could have gotten Harvey Keitel to be Gimli? Because I could see that maybe working out. If we had to, Kevin, if we had to imagine like the best case scenario here.
I'm trying to think if Harvey Keitel would be Gimli. I mean, do you think that's his part? Or do you go with...
I think that's a natural.
Do you replace? Oh, you don't think you replace? What's his name? No, he probably would like. Why am I forgetting his name? He played
Michael Madsen.
No. Oh my god. Okay, now this is a game that I can get behind. Figuring out who the Tarantino people, the typical Tarantino people would be, because it's not Sauron. It's the Grey Wizard.
Oh, Saruman.
It's Saruman.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would... But I was thinking maybe Harvey Keitel could play Saruman.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if he would have been that old enough. What do you think? He probably would have been able to, I guess.
Yeah, he would have been able to pull it off.
They can make people look older, I suppose, if they have to.
But I do think, I suppose, if they're casting a movie like that, and I don't know why I'm forgetting his name, because he just passed away recently. Who played Saruman? Christopher Lee.
He was awesome. It's hard to imagine someone being better than him.
Well, I'm just saying that if Tarantino is making the choices, though, you kind of had a bigger scope for Lord of the Rings than you do any of Tarantino's movies. Like, he does a great job of kind of getting, like, six characters really deep.
Yeah.
But, like, he's never really been involved with something that involves...
I guess he had the Hateful Eight, right? And there's, what, nine members of the Fellowship? Wait, no. Was that right? Oh, man, this is really embarrassing.
There's the Hateful Eight and then the Prisoner. So it would have been nine main people in the movie.
Oh, I see. So the title is deceptive, in a way.
Not really, because they are all the bounty hunters. Like, I don't think she's hateful, technically.
Okay. That makes sense.
Although I do think that the, and I'm trying to think of, there was a woman, I don't know if she was an officer or just a bounty hunter to, like, Kurt Russell and, and I'm trying to think of who else was the bounty hunter or bounty hunters in that one. Because they think there's more than one. I don't know if Samuel L. was a bounty hunter or he was part of the part of the law.
So, yeah, Samuel L. Jackson. I'm not sure.
I don't think
he could fit into Lord of the Rings, though. I'm not sure. Well, no, he could be somebody.
Oh, he could definitely be someone. Why not?
There's no black people in Lord of the Rings.
Well, who cares? Bring some diversity to Lord of the Rings.
Now, that could be a good thing that, that could be a good thing that Quentin Tarantino did to bring a little diversity to Lord of the Rings, because I could see him being, not caring about the source material in that way.
Well, or even just the fact that they did kind of make people... they did try to divide people up into tribes and whatnot. I mean, you really could have made all of the riders of Rohan African-American and,
You could have. I mean, except they were explicitly described as being fair-skinned and blonde-haired in the books, but...
Oh, were they?
Yeah, but that's all right. I mean, I would get behind them changing that up. And I could definitely see Tarantino getting behind changing it up too, so I think that could actually be a good thing about the movie, or an interesting thing.
I think he would work as the, because he could do the crazy king thing.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Theoden. I don't know. I can't see him being the guy who's like under control of some guy named Wormtongue. I mean, that is like the most obvious bad guy name, but. To be fair, that was the name people gave him. That was not actually his real name. That was more of a nickname.
That was a nickname.
To be fair. Some people like to rag on that that character's name.
Oh, I mean, you always could have put Samuel under under one of the characters, too, if you wanted to. Oh. Could have been Gollum, maybe.
Okay, so I was trying to figure out. Oh, Samuel L. is Gollum.
I don't know. I'm just
that'd be bold.
I'm throwing voice. You know, he could do a voice and be, a very active participant in the movie. He wouldn't be doing the Andy Serkis and acting it out along with being the voice.
I'm not sure Tarantino would be ballsy enough to make Samuel L. Aragorn, but that would be an interesting choice. I'm not sure. a younger Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, Aragorn was supposed to be,
he was kind of old.
Years old or something like that, even though he had the, blood of the men of Western Ness or whatever.
So he lived a few hundred years. Like, he was kind of normal elf age, because elf age was even longer lasting in Lord of the Rings than what I would have typically thought of in, the Dragonlance novels that we were talking about, or even standard D&D. Like, felt like they are 300 to 500, but they kind of feel like 5 to 1,000 in
elves,
Lord of the Rings.
The elves are technically...
immortal.
Immortal in the Lord of the Rings, yes. So, like, Elrond, for example, was, around for 6,000 years by the time of the story of the Lord of the Rings. So it's, those elves stick around for a long time. Unless they're
unless they get slain.
Yeah. So that's, but, the whole idea of like bloodlines and like that determining what you are capable of doing, like Aragorn being the direct male line descendant of the, kings of Numenor of, ancient times, which leads to him being the one who should be ruler. Like, I'm not sure that really qualifies you or not. So it is a strange sort of, you know, I guess you could say racist worldview. So, like I said, that could be interesting to see Samuel L. Jackson take on that role. And that would be interesting. I'm not sure that Tarantino would be quite ballsy enough to do that, though. but it would be interesting.
Yeah. And I was trying to think of the other name that you threw out there that was a regular. Oh, you'd have to think of who Tim Roth is.
Oh, good one. I think when you said his name, well...
And we'd have Steve Buscemi in the movie somewhere.
Yeah, Buscemi, I was maybe thinking for Gollum. I think that could be
an interesting choice. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I think you nailed it with that one.
I think he could bring an interesting something to that part.
Yeah, I'd be all over that.
Mm-hmm.
And I could almost see... Tim Roth replacing Hugo Weaving as Elrond.
Oh, because I was going to say Boromir there for
Tim Roth. Oh, yeah, that could work too.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit younger. He would have been a little bit younger than Hugo was. Although, I mean, they did kind of... Hugo Weaving wasn't that old by when that movie came out. Although, he wasn't that young either, I guess. But
although that would be tough because Sean Bean is a very good Boromir. So,
oh,
it's hard to kind of think of necessarily trading up from his job doing the role.
Oh well, I mean, I think it would be really hard for any of the roles to be traded up, honestly. Yeah, like there's not a whole lot of holes that I was sitting there going, oh, wow, I really wish someone else were in that spot.
You know, as interesting as it might be to see Steve Buscemi as Gollum, I think maybe if we had to pick one or the other, I could see going with Andy Serkis, just because...
How much that guy put into that role, I don't see Steve Buscemi, again, getting that physical in that kind of a role.
And it's, you have to be able to sort of grasp the technology, I think, too, to understand like how it's going to portray you.
So, oh,
it's something that you know, Serkis definitely had. I feel like,
agreed.
So it would be maybe harder for some other traditional actor to kind of adjust to it. So it would be harder to imagine that. But so yeah. I think the point we're trying to make is we're glad that this didn't actually happen.
Oh, no. This falls under that category of... like, there are so many different stories of, you know, what almost happened in Hollywood. And there isn't an instance where I'm like, oh, man, I wish this would have turned out different. Like, I'm glad Eric Stoltz didn't work out in Back to the Future.
Right.
You know... I'm completely fine that Eric Stoltz got sick for Anaconda, too.
Did you know that Michael J. Fox was filming Back to the Future at the same time as he was doing Family Ties? And he had to, like, work, like, these crazy long days?
Oh.
That sounds... I mean...
No, I was not familiar with that part.
That's crazy to think about.
Oh.
You know, looking back, I guess.
Yeah, that's a lot of hours to be working, I'm sure.
You know, people think about acting being... an easy job, but I don't know. If you do, you know, it is kind of, I would say you have to focus on it, know what you're doing, know your lines.
Yeah, I mean, there can be some bad acting.
Mm-hmm.
Or just stuff mailed in. There are good actors that mail things in. You know, as much as I like... and I'm trying to think of what his name is. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time with names tonight.
What's the movie?
Liam Neeson.
Oh, yes.
I've liked him in a lot of roles, but Battleship, dude, mailed in his performance. So, and, I mean, so much so when someone's like, oh, this is one of my favorite movies, I'm like, to make fun of? Like, I think that was one where Melissa's like, I might need to stop taking you to movies.
Wait, who had the favorite movie that was Battleship?
It was one of our friends. Posted it on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
They're like, oh, this is one of my favorite movies. I'm like, oh, my God, that thing is trash. Like, it's amusing trash, but it's trash nonetheless.
I have actually never seen that one. So,
oh yeah, like it's almost MST3K level terrible.
Like, you don't feel like they're taking it very seriously, even the people making the movie?
Oh.
Well, definitely not Liam Neeson, it sounds like.
Oh, no. Well, A, he wasn't featured that much in the movie. But, I mean, it was just like, they're like, oh, you have a loan you need to pay off? Sure, we'll pay you a couple $1 million. And he just showed up for a couple of scenes, said some lines, and left. Like, that guy did not work for that one. He was great as Qui-Gon Jinn. Terrible in Battleship. Just completely mailed that thing in. And just the stuff that happens in Battleship is completely outrageous. But again, like, it's obviously, if I remember it that much, it did something to my psyche. Like, I probably remember that better than a lot of movies.
So, you, on some level, you enjoyed it.
Yeah, like, it was almost... I started thinking about, because they just came out with the second one, with the giant Gundam suits.
Pacific Rim?
Pacific Rim. Yeah, like that first one, the story was complete trash. But like the presentation and how the fight scenes worked out and how everything looked, like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm all in. But... just the story and the acting was so bad in Battleship. I'm like, nah, I'm not buying this one. Sorry, guys. Like, it could have been in that good-bad realm. And to me, it just fell too much into just the bad-bad realm.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, if I remember it that much, there's some good-bad stuff about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a fine line that movies can walk sometimes. Because, It has to be bad in the right way, almost. And
100% in my opinion. Like, it's got to be, because I mean, I talk about my love of good bad TV shows all the time. I've talked about CSI Miami, Hawaii 5-0 is just complete trash, but I love it. You know, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. You know, it's an extremely enjoyable show, but it is not well written, and there are large inconsistencies in the overall story arcs.
Right. Yeah, that does seem like you know, there are certain shows like that it really doesn't matter. You still like them.
Oh yeah.
So that could be one of those type of situations.
Yeah, and I do it far more with TV shows than with movies, I would say. Because, like, even the MST3K ones, I'm like, nah, man, I'm sorry, that's just terrible. Or even the How Did This Get Made? I have not watched one of those movies yet.
Oh, the movies that they feature on there? There's some, like, that I've seen already.
Yeah, unless I have watched it at some prior point in my life, I have not gone out of my way to watch it just to listen to the podcast.
Right. I think you can enjoy that show without having watched the movies. At least I do. So.
Oh yeah.
It's well worth checking out in case anyone hasn't seen it. I'm sure everybody in the world has heard of that one. The How Did This Get Made podcast, of course.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
And we've name dropped it a number of times. Yeah. To boot.
So if you've listened to this show, you've heard of it.
But yeah, I mean, I would say that Lord of the Rings Quentin Tarantino style might have ended up on that show.
Mm-hmm. And that would be sad, because then we still wouldn't have a good version of Lord of the Rings. Because I feel like if that movie didn't work out, like, there's not going to be a rush to make another one, you know?
No, it that would be terribly disappointing. Again, as much as I dislike the second movie, they did a great job, because that cartoon was trash.
Yes. So that was the last time that they tried to make a one movie version of The Lord of the Rings, and yeah, it was not good.
There's just too much information, and I mean, and I believe we've bemoaned the fact that The Hobbit, they stretched that thing out into three movies.
Well, they did stretch out The Lord of the Rings a little bit, originally Jackson wanted to do two movies of The Lord of the Rings, which I think would have been okay too, because there's parts of the Two Towers, I feel like, that kind of feel tacked on a little bit. And maybe that battle scene, I guess, that was one that Weinstein was wanting to get rid of as well, was the Helm's Deep battle.
Oh.
Which, I don't know.
Oh, well, I did forget that they had the elves save them in that one.
Right, that feels like padding to me that they kind of came up with later. And I'm like, ah, see, so I didn't like that part.
But yeah, again, second movie problems.
Yes, so it would have been interesting as two movies, but...
Yeah, I think that you could have pulled it off. It would have been tough. There's just a lot of... the book is just very dense.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we were kind of talking about a Dragonlance a little bit earlier. Much easier read. You know, I don't think it's nearly as heavy. And I don't think you're going to stretch the other book that, that you got for me, Annihilation, out into two movies. Now, it is a series, so it would be easy to, if things went well, to pop it into another movie.
True.
But it's still a whole nother book. And, I mean, really, it's like 300 pages or so per part to Lord of the Rings. I mean, they're legit books just on their own.
Yeah.
Really, like...
And the books are, I feel like, pretty dense. Like, there's a lot to kind of unpack from the novel. So, there's a lot of depth there, which...
Makes it easy to
justify having three movies worth of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't make that point very well, but
I think that's what you were trying to
go towards.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's to me, it is fun to speculate about it, but
we're
not gonna stick around to mention that actually happening.
Yeah, I am completely fine with the fact that that did not happen.
So there's, you know, like we said, there's some bad ideas that don't happen. But then there's some, Kevin, bad ideas, unfortunately, do happen.
Yeah, and this is another one that you don't really need to go a whole lot deeper than the headline to realize how horrific this is. Designer of world's tallest water slide charged with murder after ride decapitates young boy.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody remembers this story that came up. I think it was earlier last summer at the world's tallest water slide.
Yeah, it's in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully not in OPA territory.
No.
Some other state perpetrated this problem.
No, but we bring you the notable news sometimes wherever it happens, Kevin. And,
yeah, and honestly, it's kind of crazy that they thought about this in 2012, but the person that designed this water slide was not in, a water park designer or even a roller coaster designer. The guy just kind of did it.
Yeah, so this would be like the equivalent of kids building up a ramp to jump off on your sled riding, or or biking.
And I will admit, we 100% did some stuff that was completely unsafe in our day.
Right.
In that department.
No, I can remember needing to get stitches in my chin after trying to jump a bike ramp that was at way too high an incline. And I flew over the handlebars and hit my chin on the ground. The pavement of the sidewalk. So, yeah, that sucks. But
yeah, it sucks even more to lose your head.
At least I was able to walk away from it. This ride and the story behind the kind of like the creation of this ride, which we said is the largest or the tallest water slide in the world. And you mentioned it was in Kansas, which apparently has very lax laws.
So, I guess I didn't realize that this was, because 2016 was when the murder happened.
Okay, so it was actually 2 years ago at this point.
Yeah, so, but it was a this year post.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird.
Well, I knew they did an investigation after this happened. But it turns, I guess they kind of came out with the results here recently.
So it was conceived in 2012, and in 20 months later, it was built and being used. And they said 13 injuries, including 2 concussions and 1 case of temporary blindness.
Yeah, that sounds bad. People were going airborne, which is, I guess, more unpredictable, and you could potentially fall out of the...
That was the problem, though, is that you could not fall out of it because there was a cage over top.
Well, I think the idea was to prevent you from falling out. They had to build, or they thought to build this...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a cage or netting or something.
Well, yeah, it was netting with solid supports at certain increments.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those supports was what this child hit, because, it wasn't designed correctly to, keep the human body down. Like, you've got to make sure that the drag, that the physics of a body going down there are correct. At the proper angle so as not to cause someone to get air. Like, that is really not the point of a ride. Like, it's fun to do that, but it's usually not good news.
Yeah. It's not a great way to go, I would say. And it's really shocking that this guy who designed the ride didn't have any kind of engineering background or anything, like you said.
Hey,
somebody who knew what they were doing would be able to design it in a way that this wouldn't happen, potentially.
Yeah, like, I just think about what you need to do to get a building built in this situation. And I'm not sure how an inspector says, yup,
well, I see.
For this. Like, you see 2 test runs, and it's just like, yep, everything looks great. Okay, let's go. Because they only saw, full-sized adults use it. They did not factor in children who, there's just different physics when it's a child. They're smaller, they're lighter. Things don't work the same as if you're, 200 pounds.
Right. Yeah, they...
when you weigh 80 pounds, it's a whole different ballgame, kids.
And you should, they should factor that in or make rules about, having a certain amount of weight on the, but it sounds like.
That you need to be a certain weight on the, before you get on the ride, or, they mm-hmm. do have height.
Right.
Height ones.
So it's a bummer that this could have been prevented if there had been a little more oversight, because. I remember reading when this first happened that they said that Kansas, there are several places to have water slide type attractions there because the rules are very lax in terms of inspections and things.
That's just mind boggling to me. Like, I know that I get complaints from some contractors who are like, oh, this guy's being an asshole. Well, let's just say that sometimes the contractor isn't always being nice, which causes some of the guys to be assholes. Setting that aside, more times than not, those types of codes are there to help keep people safe.
Right.
Like, I know that that is not always a popular thing, but there's a reason why there are less house fires now than there used to be. Having lax laws is not always the solution to something that can decapitate someone.
Right. and this is a prime example, you, I think, want to try to make people be able to be safe when they're going to have fun with their family, you know?
Oh, right.
So, I feel like this is a good use of government resources, really, to check this sort of stuff out.
Agreed. And government resources were questioned about happenings of zombie animals, Ken, which happened to be in Northeast Ohio. So they went to the experts at Kent State University, of course.
Oh, nice shout out to the Golden Flashes there.
Yeah, might have been part of the reason why this story even came up on my timeline. But a...
And the headline, zombie animals, is rather dramatic, I would say.
Yes. And the fact that it would seem from the article itself that the people that have run into these animals are convinced that they're running into zombie animals, but they evidently have not heard of rabies.
Well, do you think that's kind of the basis for the stories of zombies, do you think? I mean, or one of the possible basis that people would get rabies and then...
Oh, and get rabid.
Yeah.
I would think that there is some something rooted in the zombie ethos. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, that that goes back to rabies. Especially because you bite something and it gets infected.
Yeah.
You don't turn into a zombie, but you do turn dead. So, I mean, there is that.
Something like a, what was that movie called? Oh, now it's my turn to forget something. 28 days later with the zombies there, they were, not truly zombies, but they were like infected with this virus or whatever. That was sort of like a souped up rabies, I guess.
But oh, okay.
Did you ever see that one?
No, I did not see that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was pretty scary movie. If you're ever in a movie for a horror movie, check that one out. But yeah, this article is describing rabies, not really zombies. So the headline, I would say, is one of those deceptive headlines, Kevin.
Yeah, the other ones were bang on, and I could have talked about them for a long time. This one, I'm just ready to, you know, yell at people for putting up this headline.
Now, then that was okay. So that was my first take of this article, and then I thought, but wait a minute, what if this crazy headline is making more people click on it to actually read that there is these animals that have rabies in the area, and maybe you should be on the lookout.
In that, I did cross my mind, considering the fact that my nearly 15-year-old dog is not as threatening as she once was.
Well, and something with rabies isn't necessarily considering the pros and cons of a situation, and it's just kind of going to, you know, move towards someone and, you know, attack or whatever.
Right, yeah. It's not really a good situation to be in, even if she were in more of the mood to tangle.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly feel a little more safe that she would scare them off if she were a little more ferocious as she used to be, at least in those situations.
Yeah, you'd feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah, but it's certainly something I'm like, because I do know that there are raccoons that live in the sewers around here. It is certainly something that could be a possibility. And considering that it does seem to be an Ohio thing, because it was, they mentioned raccoons and a coyote. You know, these things are not completely, you know, there are some running around Columbus even. So you got to kind of keep an eye out for that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I don't know, can a skunk get rabies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that is something that it certainly is in my wheelhouse. There are a lot of skunks in this area.
Rabbit skunk does not sound like a good combination.
No, that does not sound like fun at all.
Mm-mm. No, no, there's a...
I dealt with a non-rabbit variety, still not fun. Yeah.
There's a lovely picture of a raccoon accompanying this article. That would not be great either, I don't feel like, to see a rabid raccoon.
Yeah, it looks pretty angry.
Yeah.
And it is drooling, so you kind of, and it's baring its teeth. It certainly has a zombie-esque quality to it.
Mm-hmm. Sort of shuffling, from what I can tell. But zombies being very popular now, this could be a ploy to kind of get the word out. I'm not sure.
Even
I feel about that idea, but you know, at least I can, I guess, understand the idea behind that.
Yeah. Again, having to walk a dog, I appreciate being given a heads up.
They could probably just tell people that, hey, there's animals with rabies, and that might still get people's attention. But you know, I don't know. That's just me. But then we wouldn't be covering it, I suppose. So who knows? This could be their brilliant plan working.
Yeah. I know something that other people will not have to worry about, and that is drinking the beverages, the Beltane beers that we have just finished. Ken, I do believe the ultimate. Yeah, it was the ultimate thrill rye. Last year's WrestleMania beer, which I can't believe it's been over a calendar year, finally finished off all of those. That was my beer. I believe you're drinking the Born on Mars IPA, which was even older, I believe, wedding beer. So it's nearly 3 years old.
I'm going to say it's holding up pretty good.
That's good, because they do say that the hop does not always hold up well. That's good to know. Trying to lighten the load when Stunt Granny Studios North changes locations. I still hope it's north. So we will leave it at that. I am at DeFrango11. He's at Gozer3. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, because you haven't. Please help.
All right. Have a great week, guys.